Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How are you doing today, Dennis?
I'm good, Dusty. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It was good to see you in Scottsdale a couple of months ago, and here before we know it, finally college football will be underway.
Sneaking up, I think a month from today, or almost a month from today, the SEC Media Day starts.
Wow. Hey, I've never been down there. Is that a fiasco? How crazy does it get down there in Hoover?
It's not a fiasco. It's just crazy. It embodies the fervor and, you know, following that SEC football has. It's just crazy where even the lowliest of coaches, I remember one year, Woody Woodenhofer, remember that name?
Was the
Vanderbilt coach and needed police security to get through the lobby of the hotel in Hoover, Alabama. So that ought to give you an idea of how big it is.
He needed security on offenses that he had, too. There. Hey, I know we're going to talk a little bit about the transfer rules and things like that, but Dennis, I want to go back to an article that you wrote on Texas A&M. Dusty and I were having a conversation yesterday in the car. Of course, Jerry Schmidt left Oklahoma to go to College Station. Jimbo Fisher is there. They're really doing well in the recruiting rankings and such. What are the realistic expectations for them this season, and what do you see for them in a three-year window?
Yeah, that's what I wanted them to decide. You know, for $75 million over 10 years, what is the expectation for a program that hasn't won a conference title in 20 years and I think by any logical measure would be the fourth best program in its own division this year? And so I think you've got to look at it at a 10-year window, because this is the most money ever paid to a college coach over the term of the contract. And, you know, at the end of this, do Aggies, are they satisfied with the national championship? Are they satisfied with multiple conference championships? What's the expectation? And I think the expectation is a national championship when you've got the best of everything on that campus. I don't have to tell anybody else that. But you're playing year after year in the best division of the best league. So I think that's the expectation. Now, whether Jimbo can get there, I think that's a heck of an ask at Texas A&M, considering right now Auburn has a coach with a new 7-year contract. Nick Saban isn't going anywhere. LSU is going to be LSU no matter who's there. It's a big ask.
Hey, Dennis, since we're talking about new coaches and new places, there have been several this year, but I'm going to just give you three. Scott Frost at Nebraska, Chip Kelly at UCLA, and I'd even say Dan Mullen at Florida. I think Dan Mullen's working with more than the other two, but of those three, who gets it turned around the quickest?
The quickest? Wow. I hadn't been hit with that one. Turning it around at Florida would mean winning the East.
Yep.
And Georgia's just getting started there under Kirby Smart. So I won't say Florida. UCLA is kind of fluid, but they're not very good this year, and Chip doesn't have a quarterback. I guess I'd say Scott Frost, because the expectation there is just win the West. You know, the easier of the two division in the Big Ten. He said it out loud. Why can't we be Wisconsin? You know, they're basically the same program with divergent results the last few years, both in state capitals, both in states with very little Division I talent, and in cold climates that can work against you. But Wisconsin is a dominant program in that division. It's not that league. And it's got for us that we should be Wisconsin, and that's who they're aiming to be. I think they can get there. I think they'd do a tap dance if they got to a bowl this year, you know, if they go 6-6, given what they have. But I think he can get it there really, really quick. I think Nebraska can be that team that wins the West under Scott Frost. I love Scott Frost.
Dennis, the Big 12 is doing surprisingly well in revenues and what they're paying out of what I expected over from, say, 3 or 4 years ago. The Pac-12 is not doing so well. When this next round of conference realignment comes up, what do you see? Is the Big 12 in a better position than maybe it was the last time they realigned? And what would be the possibility of some schools joining the Big 12, say, for instance, Arizona State?
The way things stand right now, and that could change in a heartbeat, I think the Big 12's fine. I think they know they're fine after the, you know, the wasted time doing the exploration about expansion. They're lean and mean. They're getting, you know, the 10 is good. They're getting 7 in the tournament every year. They've won a Heisman. They've won, gotten to the playoff 2 of the last 4 years. The one piece they have to get going is Texas has to get good. And right. If that happens, and I think it will under Tom Herman, where you have those annual Texas OU games, which under Mack Brown and Bob Stoops were life-changing events in October. You get that going, and I think that answers the other questions. If you're Oklahoma or Texas, where is the money basically being equal? Because Texas is pulling down $50 million total in revenue right now. Where's another place where you're going to win championships as easily as you do in the Big 12? You know, you're not going to be the number one program in the Big 10 if you go there. You walk into that meeting room and you're going in with Michigan, Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State. Same with Oklahoma and the SEC. And I had this, a Twitter conversation with a fan online. And he said, oh, Oklahoma's better than that. I go, no, they walked into that. I'm talking about influence and power. Yeah, Oklahoma's really good right now. But they're not Alabama. I would argue they're not Auburn. And they're not LSU in that league where they have a culture established. They know how to recruit. You know, let's see Oklahoma play SEC-style defense, you know, for one thing. So the best place for them and the Big 12 in the long run is I think they just stay like they are. Could they pick up some teams? Yeah, but we know the drawback of that. It's the networks that own these rights don't want them to.
I think you're right in saying that the Big 12 is on much better footing. But, man, I'm going to tell you, it wasn't 2 years ago that I know my partner and I feel like I read a bunch of your stuff. It almost seemed like a foregone conclusion that this thing was going to be over and done with. So as quickly as it's changed that way, I don't think you can, you know what I mean? You just kind of have to wait and see how it plays out because it could turn the other direction too.
Yeah, that's why I said as we sit here right now. Now, what you're talking about is 2010. It was on shaky ground. During the 2 years of expansion, that was an either-or proposition. But, you know, do we do this or we don't do this, but we're still going to become a league. And I don't have to tell anybody, much of that was driven to the detriment of the league by David Bourne. He just shot his mouth off too much and almost got things destroyed. So, I think they're really good right now. We'll see. We don't know. We're starting to see it. We don't know the future of linear television, of the social media giants. I mean, there's mergers every day. How's that going to impact these contracts when they come open? I can't answer that. But right now, the Big 12 is in great shape.
I got to follow up on that. I mean, what does that mean in the 2 or 3, 4 year window for college football? Because I think there's people all the time that think that, well, it's going to change overnight to third tier rights and things like that. Are we still going to be watching college football on major networks for the next however many years?
Yeah, I mean, 2, 3, 4 years, absolutely. I think the first big contract to come up is the Big Ten, I think, in 22 or 23, and then it's the Pac-12 in 23, and then the Big 12 in 25. And that's still 7 years away. Yeah, those deals. And don't forget, those deals are all backloaded. So and that's why you're seeing a lot of money in the Big 12. A large part of the money is yet to be paid out yet, so there's no reason for anybody to do anything. I think it's when one of these social media giants decides to dip their toe in, when Comcast, you know, for example, decides to become the network of the Big Ten, if they try to do that, then things will change. But we've got contracts we've got to fulfill right now.
Talking with Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com does a fantastic job covering college football, and I was reading your piece, I think it was Tuesday. You may have put it out Monday night late, but it was a really good piece talking about transfers and how this transfer rule has now been changed. Obviously, also, we saw that redshirting has changed quite a bit, too. Walk my listeners through what exactly changed as it relates to transfers, as well as that redshirt year being able to, it seems like, give schools and players a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah, more freedom for transfers and really, really fair. We all grew up with knowing that a school or coach could block a player. That's at least 54 years old, that practice. I still can't find legislation that allowed that, but it's at least been since 1964, and there was a certain indentured servitude to that. The average student transfers, the average student on the street transfers 37% of the time, but basketball coaches were losing their minds because incoming freshmen were transferring 40% of the time by the end of their sophomore year. Well, that just made them the normal student on the street. But we all know it's not about education. It's about roster management and money and winning. And this just gives players more freedom. They can now, instead of seeking permission to contact other schools, they just tell the school, hey, I'm leaving. And their name goes into a database. Everybody can see it. It does become sort of a free agent list. But that doesn't keep them from having to sit out as undergrads. They still have to sit out that year. And coaches, you know, argue, oh, it'll be free agency. Look, when that kid walks into your office and tells you he's putting his name in that portal, the coach already knows. You know, he has his ear to the ground. He talks to parents. He talks to a high school coach. He talks to a 7-on-7 coach. There's going to be no kid who surprises a coach when he walks in there and informs him. So that's a net win for players. I think the other
I love that rule, by the way, Dennis. Yeah. I've been arguing for that for about four years on the radio now. It just makes sense to allow the kids to – the opportunity to get an education and play football where they want. Obviously, they have to sit out if they have a red shirt. If they have red shirt, they lose a year of eligibility. If they haven't, that's the year. But you would just think that if, as a student athlete, you should be able to attend a college that you want without somebody telling you can't go there.
Right, right. It just makes sense. And I think the officials at the NCAA saw legal liability there. Sooner or later, somebody's going to sue and win that in court, and they change it themselves rather than have somebody else change it. On the redshirt thing, that's another common sense thing. I think that came, the original legislation came from the AFCA, where you can now, you have 4 1/3 years to play 5. In other words, you can play up to 4 games in a given season and still retain your eligibility from that year. And I think it makes sense because how many times have coaches lost key players, you know, say late in the season, and they've got to make a decision. Well, do I pull the red shirt off this freshman or somebody else so he can go in and play, and maybe we can make a bowl game, but that's burning a year of eligibility. That doesn't necessarily do that now. Now it's fraught with consequences. You may have coaches loading up and playing their bowl games with red shirt freshmen who don't lose their eligibility just to see how they do. I really don't have a problem with that. It's a bowl game. You know, we're not curing cancer here. So, I think it's good for both sides.
Can anybody crack Alabama Clemson this year in the college football?
And I'm sorry, you dropped out.
Top two, Alabama Clemson. Do you see anybody cracking the top two out of those teams?
Oh, Alabama Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State. Here's where we are in college football. Here are my outliers. Now, tell me if these are outliers. I think great dark horses for the playoffs this year are both Wisconsin and Michigan State. Now, if those are outliers, those are Cinderella teams, and we don't have much flexibility. So, no, we got it about right. Michigan State's got, I think, 18 starters back and a really good quarterback. Wisconsin, had they beaten Ohio State, would have been in the playoff last year. So, they're very, very close. So that's same suspects.
Mark and I were talking the other day. I think Clemson might have the best front line, defensive line, and even depth that I can possibly remember in college football. I went back to NC State my draft year in 06 when they had Mario Williams, Manny Lawson. They had another good D tackle, 3 first rounders. But I see 3, if not 4, first round picks in that Clemson defensive line. It's going to be difficult for opposing offensive lines in the ACC.
I mean, I'm looking for comparisons. You know, the Selman brothers at Oklahoma in the 70s. I mean, we're talking all time in the history of the game. When I think Christian Wilkins came back, or one of those guys came back.
Cleveland Farrell and Christian Wilkins.
Yeah, and I saw them live last year at Virginia Tech, and they completely manhandled Virginia Tech even then. So you've got, you're talking about 4 players on the defensive line that all stayed and just going to wreak havoc. They're going to be very, very good.
Absolutely. Well, you're very, very good in your own right, Dennis. We appreciate you joining us today, and always enjoy reading your stuff, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys. You bet.
Dennis.cbsports.com. Mark, we were talking about that Clemson D-line. I was drawing a blank, and the other day it just popped in my head, and I texted you. But Cleland Farrell, he's the other defensive end. And I was looking at a mock draft. I didn't even realize it. There's some people think he may go in the top three. So Dexter Lawrence might be the best D-tackle. Christian Wilkins, he's a versatile D-tackle slash DN. They are loaded there in Clemson. I know that won't impress Jake Trotter, but you know that impresses me, Marcus.
I do know that it impresses you. Jake Trotter coming up at 1 o'clock. We need to take a break. Stay tuned. There's a there's an event that you might be interested in this weekend after we put together this grill. I'll tell you about that next. Stay tuned.
Sports Animal Soundbite.
Did you guys hear it all about this?